Blog Talk Radio.
Bullshit.
12-step brainwash camp. They make you think if you drop out, you ain't got a chance to advance in life. They try to make you pull your pants up. Students fight the teachers and get took away in handcuffs. And if that wasn't enough, then they expel you. All your people's understanding, but to them, you a failure. Observation and participation, my favorite teachers. When they beat us in the head with them books, it don't reach us. Whether you break dance or rock suede Adidas or be in the bathroom with your clique smoking reefer, then you know they mad. Class ain't important unless you add enough cash and multiple. Unemployment ain't rewarding. They may as well teach us extortion. You either get paid or locked up. The principal is like a warden in the 4 years since. Mad niggas never finish, but that doesn't mean I couldn't be a doctor or a dentist.
They tools can't teach us shit. My people need freedom. We trying to get all we can get. All my high school teachers could suck my dick, telling me white man lies, straight bullshit. They tools can't teach us shit. My people need freedom. We trying to get all we can get. All my high school teachers could suck my dick, telling me white man lies, straight bullshit. Bullshit.
This, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food, what he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here.
I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school, you nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. why you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy, that's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there, and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening. Because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he gonna want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back. To keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negro and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They are not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders began to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Matt Turner, co-host myself, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black plea, same black time, to participate. Press 1. Phone number to call in is 845-277-9266. Tonight's topic, the state-backed murder of Ronald Green. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chair, Matt Turner, Black Power, and your usual comrade. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Black Power, all power to the people. Right on.
Black Power.
Yeah, I want to welcome those. Always, we want to welcome, you know, those who are listening to another show. We say black power and all power to the people. As usual, you know, we as a People's Political Party see this as a platform to do what we feel is necessary and, from the perspective of politicizing, you know, the people. What we consider to be a proper political education. We don't say that out of arrogance or like we necessarily have a monopoly on anything. We like to come from a, you know, like a historical perspective, like understanding our experience as individuals, you know, each of us as individuals, you know, choosing our own daily path, you know, in life. But however, at the same time, our experience collectively as a people hearing what is now referred to as the United States of America. You know, we choose terms very carefully. We don't, you know, throw them around loosely. Each of the terms that we use, though may not be perfect at all times, are conscious decisions. And we choose those terms due to a relationship with what we refer to as the state. And for those who don't understand or know what the word state means, those of us who don't, what we mean by the state is the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police who work in concerted effort, hand in glove. Some people, you know, would say hand in hand, but we believe in hand in glove to keep the hierarchy intact. You know, one that was established from one. You know, George Washington did what he did to, you know, create this corporation as the chief executive officer. Now, that language may, of course, there, you know, be more foreign too. But like I said, we believe in doing our homework, you know, before we, you know, just, you know, some, you know, blab off at the mouth, so to speak, you know. But due to the relationship, which is inherently irreconcilable, which leads us down the path of confrontation eventually. And again, we say that, you know, judging by history, oppressed peoples have gone through, you know, hell, one way you can describe it, the conditions put in a position and the material conditions that drive what we refer to as concrete realities. And tonight we're going to discuss the state-backed murder of Ronald Green as an example of the material conditions that lead to this concrete reality, which is his murder. His murder we understand, believe is state backed, which is why there's been these maneuvers on the chessboard, you know, over the past several years to minimize as much, if not declare just wipe the slate clean in terms of no one doing any time. You know what I'm saying? But it's an example of what we talk about when we talk about the relationship that has been going on. Some believe 1619. We understand that that's before 1619, around 1501, and what is now referred to as the Caribbean. There's 80 million black people in Brazil, you know, that were the earliest population, the descendants that were forced over the ocean, over the Atlantic. We landed in that part of this world, which is now known as North and South America. And it's important that we say that because this 1619 thing is a, it can be divisive as though we can, you know, kind of cut ourselves off. And we want to expand the struggle nationally, internationally, and rip the veil off this so-called government and let the world really see the type of things that we go through on a daily basis collectively. Ronald Green was murdered 2019. Black motorist, you know, so-called arrest. And, you know, by a mob, five white goons who we're told are police officers whose role is to serve and protect American citizens, keep law and order. The police, you know, supposedly their role is to protect society or the people from violent criminals, you know, the criminal elements. And we know that Ronald Green was far from that. So how else we are supposed to explain his death, if not by what we understand as the role, the necessary role of the police in the system of capitalism. And it's a shame that the average person may not have been taught in such a way or from a perspective of taking capitalism as a system and, you know, dissecting it and looking at the different roles that go into the makeup of it, the operation of it. And that what we say is the state. And again, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, you know, which pretty much would sum it up. You know, and of course, you know, you can talk about economics, politics, the sociology, whatnot, you know. And so his murder is a quintessential example of the real role of the police in the system. The founder of the Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton, and Bobby Seale, they had, and particularly Huey P. Newton, when questioned or queried about the police treatment, you know, the same, you know, back then in 66, 67, 68, you know, the same type of treatment that was meted out to black people back then is the same type of treatment being meted out to black people now. And so he's trying to, asking, you know, a defenseman of Huey P. Newton, you know, their perspective, their view of the police. And he simply said that, well, the police could possibly be here to protect us because we don't own anything. You know, and so he was making the case that the police primary specific role within society and the capitalist system is to protect the property class, you know, the land brokers, the power brokers, who determine the direction of our lives collectively as black people, who affect the way we live, will affect how we're going to live in terms of geographics, demographically, you know what I'm saying, in these adjectives that's applied to communities where people live, you know, the urban environments, the ghetto, the hood, whatnot, the periphery even, off of the more wealthier class, white ruling class elites, who are the steerers, the proprietors, the stakeholders, the stockholders of the state. And so inherent contradiction that on their part, that it would allow them to see us in the same vein when their interest has nothing to do with our interest, but however, taking an interest in us as being part of the labor force, the labor class, the so-called proletariat, these Russian terms that were used 100-something years ago, when these contradictions pop up in Europe and the conditions of the poor, as opposed to those who were property class then, which was strictly a class antagonism, class problems, or social issues, what we also refer to as factionalism among the whites in Europe at that time. And so with us, black people, this could not be discussed and not could be talked about without race, racism playing an important role, a factor in it, a driving, motivating force on the part of the police, you know, to exert their authority, their power, their badge and gun and nightstick over the masses of the people who are the descendants of those who built this, the infrastructure of the capitalist system, and those who benefited from the wealth, you know, the white ruling class, a minority elites, who earned unearned, let me correct that, unearned sordid wealth. And that word sordid is S-O-R-D-I-D, sordid wealth, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, to write this whole thing up to protect their interests. And so it was only inevitable that upon the release of so-called freedom of black people, or the ending of slavery of black people, that the conditions would maintain themselves, but in such subtle ways, from Reconstruction, Jim Crow, even a modern day time, and you know, rather still overt ways of fascist order, which was the Black Panther Party would use that term, that popularized that term, that they challenged those who would try to convince black people that we lived in a democracy, and challenged them to refute the position that we live in a fascist order things. And for those who understand what's meant by fascism, even according to Benito Mussolini, who's a leader of the Italian government during World War II, he declared himself as a fascist, and fascism was a combination of when the state and the corporations align themselves together and they run things, which is exactly where we're at today. There's other terms they use, such as the oligarchy, a plutocracy. The word plutocracy derives from the word Pluto. We're supposed to be the smallest of the nine planets. In other words, we're the smallest group as opposed to the, you know, to the larger society. And in the midst of that, when you prescribe a certain condition for certain people, you know, the one common thing from physical slavery to now, whether these ages of Reconstruction, Jim Crow, or whatnot, the one common denominator that all these eras have in common was violence. And this violence was organized violence, now which has become scientific violence. What they refer to as, you know, the drone, you know, the technology, and whatnot, you know, the type of stuff they were accusing Saddam Hussein of having weapons of mass destruction, and we see that weapons of mass deception, right? And so, you know, the one common denominator is the violence, you know, and that's part of the police MO to keep law and order, and this is a crucial thing too. I'll mention this right now, but and this is the thing to try to really, one of the most burning things, you know, speaking personally, you know, I've been around, you know, for quite some time and understanding, like, you know, this psychology of the police officer, and a lot of us are still asking the question. We don't understand. We're trying to figure out how is it that we've had a black president, post so-called racial society, and the police are still tripping. And so we're looking for answers. You know, we're trying to understand why the police keep so-called, quote-unquote, killing us, you know, as a black man in this country, without understanding the psyche of the police officer. And, you know, this thing about police reform, there's been these attempts to get some talking head, some figure who looks just like, you know, black men to come in and try to engineer some type of reconciliation so the police could win the faith of black people back again in this country, in this government.
Black Power.
Yeah, we'll kind of move again.
Got a call.
Wait, Connor, what'd you say? Okay, all right. Okay, go ahead. Right on.
Yes, hello?
Okay, yeah, give us your name and where you calling from, your question or comment.
Yeah, I'm Solution. I spoke to you guys last time, had a pretty congenial conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd call back in and share a little bit. I don't know if you recall me or not. It was about a week or so ago.
I remember. Look, let me just, you know, just set the tone here.
Okay.
But your question or comment, go ahead. What is your question or comment?
Well, right, thank you. My comment is going to be fairly holistic, to ascertain wealth. Wealth will improve all of one's conditions, all things being considered. And also, just to, before you comment, I'd love to get your feedback, is I recommend, especially a person under 50, and we would call that the second quarter of their life, to do 60 to 80 hours a week, get completely out of debt. There's a little bit of background. I don't know if you hear it. But to get completely out of debt, and then that way, everything they earn from that particular juncture on is theirs. So I would say seek financial freedom, because that's what it means to be free in a capitalistic society. Go ahead.
Okay, gotcha. I'm going to try to comment on it, and just, at the same time, you'll try to get back to the, you know, tone we're setting, because again, there's no leapfrogging over in. Yeah. But I'm saying, basically, the response to your question, we understand it to a certain degree. Of course, you know, the capitalist system is driven by profit motive, which is his religion, okay? And capitalism is his Bible. It's just like somebody who's Christian. They're driven by, you know, their belief in Christ, in Jesus Christ. And the Bible is their cornerstone, is their bedrock, as a Christian under the religion of Christianity. So it's their bedrock. And so this is what capitalism is to supposedly, you know, to society, by people who are trapped, but I'd like to say caught up into its jurisdiction. And of course, you know, the projection of something on anybody, whether black, red, brown, black, you know, brown, red, yellow, or white. And of course, this is the type of system you live in. We can move, all of us, we can move to Taiwan, we can move to Bangladesh, we can move to Australia and whatnot, and come into the same, you know, set that is there. You can move to Russia, you can move to China, Iran. You know, as people have been to those countries, they come back and say, man, it's dynamite in Iran, man. Like, all this time I've been believing this shit, the media been talking about. I spent 2-3 months there. People took me all over. And to my, like, they really got it together. But you would never know that. You know, you never understand. You would never know due to, you know, the corporate controlled media. But, yeah, to a certain extent. But if you take black people, try to apply black people to that equation, is it fantastic? Is it utopian? Or is it romantic as a romantic movie can get? Because collectively, you know, it was a fib, you and I, we'd both be drunk. That's an old saying that I come up when I was a boy, a teenager, right? And that's a big if. Now, you took 10 people in the room, I'm going to try to keep it short, but if you took 10 people and put them in the room, chances is that one and a half of those persons going to aspire or reach what you're talking about.
In the meantime, the other nine got to do what? No, they got to struggle. So what you're saying is also based on class. This is why you have the white ruling elite. And look, there's a lot of white people who hate them. There's a lot of white people who hate their guts right now. I meet a lot of people. Some white people, they approach or like we've been out whatnot. We get broke by white people, and they're like, look, we with you. We can't stand them MFs, man. You know, down with them, man. You know what I'm saying? Debt to them. These are white people saying this. So, which sector or faction of that white population is feeling that way, saying it? Nah, that may be what some say the proletariat, the lumper proletariat, you know, these terms they use, whatever, gutter punks or whatever. But at the same time, you have what's called the white middle class. See, this is a class issue. You have the white middle class. White middle class is basically the buffer, you know, for the white elites, for the white ruling class. They in between, you know, the so-called labor class. You know what I'm saying? The working class. That's why they call them the working class. Whereas the white middle class is in between them, even though they work, but they don't refer to them as the working class. That term has become synonymous with the source of labor, the SOL, those who Marx is saying were being exploited for their labor, selling their labor to, you know, the capitalist class who exploit them, who dominate them. So this is his story, but just to keep it short. And we're going to go so far. Black people have come across this thing where we say black dollars, black economics, whatnot. Well, we spoke about what happened. We talked about Tulsa. You know, Tulsa is a clear example. What you're saying, they did that. They did exactly what you just said. They did that in Tulsa, But what happened? It got burned down because the state couldn't allow them to compete with them, to stay with them. And of course, there's these whites, you know, you see black people wearing nice suits and a top hat and a tie, and they, you know, driving nice cars at the time. And there's a poor white who was like, yo, man, they living better than me. That's impossible. I'm white. They niggas. There's nowhere in the world these niggas supposed to be living this way. So what happened?
Hey, I would like to comment when you say so. But look here, I want to stay on your topic, but I heard you say something that made me introduce this topic. But, I do enjoy conversing with you. I'll just make that acknowledgement, that admission. But you've said some things that are really contradictory, and I would like to focus on those, if I might.
Oh, okay. Look, quickly. Give me an example of what you feel is a contradiction.
Well, okay, sure. First of all, you mentioned the 10 people in a room, and you said there will be 1.5 people approximately that will aspire to, I guess, what I was talking about, to become financially independent. Well, see, your idea is some sort of, let me just say this, the idea that you projected is some sort of messiah idea. Everybody is never going to be saved in this particular venue. And everywhere in the world, everywhere, without exception, one is going to find people that are in a higher class. There's going to be a class distinction. My point is, I once said, and this is not a cruel statement, it's just an accurate statement. The best thing one can do for the poor is to not be one of them, okay? Now, that doesn't mean a person doesn't exercise philanthropy or altruism. Sure, those are good things. But the bottom line is, in a capitalistic society, everybody is not going to exert the same effort in order to be successful. Just like I mentioned to you, that 60 to 80 hours a week working, that separates, say, the men and women from the boys and the girls, because everybody is not going to want to give up comfort in order to do that. So one of the things about being wealthy is understanding that everybody doesn't deserve that. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me say this, and I need to get back to where we was at. I feel no sense of a contradiction. I could put it another way, and I've used the term collectively because I learned over the years that, hey, all black people ain't criminals. Okay, all black people ain't rich. You know what I'm saying? All black people ain't poor. You know what I'm saying? There are some black people who are middle class that got more money than white people and live better than them and everything. Okay.
Right.
So it's a driving, motivating factor behind that. So there's no contradiction. There's no messiah that's going to come back. according to history, the people have always had to save themselves. Now, they may have had some type of spiritual psychology that fueled them. Okay, again, people are Buddhist, people are Hindu, people practice Islam, believe in the return of the great Mahdi. You know, the Christians believe in the return of Jesus Christ. You know what I'm saying? Buddha, Zoroastrianism, Uhuru Mazda, and all these other different religions. Zoroaster, who was a founder of Zoroastrianism, all these different people. Manichaeanism, these different figures, these so-called prophets that came along. So it was no messianic thing. It's a psychology. All I was simply saying that if you had 10 people, the way it's been going on the average for black people, that one and a half person end up being rich, be wealthy. They have a lot of money than a whole lot of white people. That's poor. There's more poor white people on welfare than is black people. You would never know that. You know what I'm saying? Stop right there. Because I need to get back to this Ronald Green thing. We appreciate you with the comment. You know what I'm saying? If you want to continue to listen, feel free to do so. I'm saying, but look, just back with the Ronald Green thing. Again, without understanding what the role of the police, we feel it has been a disturbance of people to get the people to understand. Chairman Mao, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, and all these different, Milko Cabral, even West Africa, they got the people to understand, okay, well, this is the person that has the lash, this person that's beating us with the lash. And what type of mentality does it have? This mentality is that I could never let them get up to the point where I'm at because I know what I've done them, because I understand these things called karma, what goes around, comes around, you reap what you sow. So in my subconscious, I must maintain rule over them. So I'm establishing what's called law. Now, again, before law and order, before these things was on the book, they broke every law that they'll charge you for a crime for and throw you in prison. But right now, they did all of that to establish themselves on top of the pyramidal structure from top down. Now, This is why Ronald Green had become a victim of it, just because the police, they look and see, and this is cold language. The police have been instructed in the psychology and taught, and this is the thing. Most of us don't understand what people talk about this, the going to the academy, they paint the academy like this some perfect place, like this some, let me correct that, like it's just some awesome place, like you go there and you learn and all these different things, and the shit is on the books. Shit is in the books, with morals and ethics and codes and professionalism, all this kind of stuff. That shit's mythical. All that shit is for the books. It reads well on paper. In the meantime, most of us don't understand that Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman has been the leading figurehead in police training. And who is this Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman? Obviously, he's in the military. And this man's MO, this man's psychology, this man's religion is violence. Is violence, hands down, violence. There's no question, no debating, no nothing. You wasting your time. Because we know that. Look him up and understand and read and get his MO. And this is the man. This is why now the military have a surplus in equipment, in these big old huge, tanks that roll around or whatever you want to call them, Humvees, whatever you want to call it. This is why you start to see more and more of them now in the police precincts. You know what I'm saying? They're literally like, hey, man, we got one. You can purchase one. They get them. Why so? Because of the militarization of the police, because of the conditions, because of the aftermath, because of the history. You see what I'm saying? This is what people need to understand. This is why Ronald Green was actually, so-called pulled over, tracked this out, whatever you want to call it, and they beat the shit out of him. They didn't see no citizen. You know what I'm saying? The book didn't even matter. What does the book say? When you do a traffic stop, what does the book say? What's the code? What's the professionalism? Professionalism, period. So what made them do what they did? It's their psychology. Their psychology, see in a sort of a threat, like in their subconscious. And so this is why they refer to it as actuality as enemy combatants. They see the average black man as an enemy combatant. This is his story. This is why. Now, as a result of that, these police in our subconscious also know that, we don't really have nothing to worry about because we know that the state's going to back us because we've been watching the state back since its inception. You know what I'm saying? So, you wash my back, I wash your back. This is the type of psychology that goes on. This is the type of permeates the mind of the average so-called police officer. And what the black men, the party start realizing the same shit, they changed the name. So, no more police officers. It's pig. Due to the irreconcilable, contradictory relationship between the average black male, the black men collectively, and the police force, keeping law in order, serve and protect. If you really look at it, you can understand. They're literally telling you what it is. They're literally telling you what it is. So now here's murder. And that's why we say high-tech lynching. High-tech lynching of Ronald Green. You know what I'm saying? The murder of Ronald Green. The state-backed murder of Ronald Green. And the whole point is this here. The charges, right? And kind of, I don't know if Miss Moan is on or Brother Marquell on. They on, man. You know, just unmute their phone. But if y'all listen, man, you know, y'all get it in at any point. You know what I'm saying? But we just want to put things in perspective here. The article that recently came out, all right? And I just want to read some of it. The Associated Press, where it says accusations of racial bias dog prosecutor in Ronald Green case, March 22nd, 2023. All right. It says, in this conservative corner of northern Louisiana, right out of the gate, they're telling you what time it is. In this conservative corner of north Louisiana. Now, you tell me what type of atmosphere that black people can actually find themselves in that part of northern Louisiana, which is conservative, and see themselves on the same equal footing as the whites who run and who control it. Right? Now, what it said, well, reverence for law enforcement runs deep. And blue lives matter. Flags often fly alongside the stars and stripes. Need I say more? Do I need to keep reading? Do I need to keep reading here? It's clear as night is from day what they're telling you here. The case of five white officers charged in the deadly 2019 arrest of black motorist Ronald Green seen as anything but a slam dunk. Do I need to say more? Every line. The reporter is literally, he's telling you what time it is, whether you like it or not. Sometimes you have to read between the lines. But he's being straightforward. He's not uncertain about nothing. He's very clear on everything he's writing. So you have to question who the reporter is. You see what I'm saying? So even with explosive body camera video showing officers stunning, beating, and dragging Green, the black district attorney, ain't that something? A mostly white Union parish has decided to bring in a hot gun. Now, let's go back over that again. The black district attorney, a mostly white Union parish has decided to bring in a hot gun. Okay. So this is a mostly white Union parish. How the hell he get to be district attorney? We'd have to throw a question of who he is. You see what I'm saying? Man, it's clear, man. We're playing no games here. Period. At all. Period. So we know we can chalk it up to this thing, but the white liberalism. There's even a segment of the white population that's trying to actually prove to black people that they're not racist. So they go and vote for a black man. So they want to get accused of being racist and whatnot. A lot of white people voted for Obama, so black people can be comfortable with him. It's man, the Nation of Islam, they believe that the white man is the devil, the black man is God. There's no change in him. Whatnot. God in his own due time is going to remove the white man from the earth. It's clear it's not, isn't that? People find it very, very problematic. They find it with historical, you take a look at history, you start realizing, well, shit, do they actually have a point here, right? So, we can chalk that up as that, okay? Now, he decides to bring in a high gun, an experienced special prosecutor with a folksy law and order bravado, and a three-decades-long reputation for winning complicated cases across the state. But Hugo Holland's background, that's his name, is also marked by accusations of racial bias, including new claims uncovered by the Associated Press that make him an unlikely advocate for racial justice. In fact, he says the concept has no place in the Green case or anywhere in the justice system. Need I say more? Justice is justice, Holland told the AP. It doesn't make any difference what race the offender or the victim is. As a, the F word, race has got nothing to do with it. Holland drew criticism as a local prosecutor for displaying a portrait in his office of Confederate general and early KKK leader Nathan Bedford Forrest. He once sent a fellow lawyer an email joking about chasing down the black guy or Mexican. And he wrote the judge in the 2021 Kyle Rittenhouse murder trial to say he would never have charged the teen acquitted of killing two people during the unrest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, calling it a good shoot. And it's a slam dunk. It is what it is. And this is what we mean. they back murder of Ronald Wayne. So they're trying to build up their case. They're trying to fabricate their case. They're trying to weave that case together to move the attention away from his brutal murder, right? To move the attention away from it and find some type of, what's that word? It escaped my mind. But some type of loophole, some type of a justification, some type of rationale to get them off. And this is his story. And this is why black people are having a problem trying to understand why they didn't get convicted. And of course, it always has something to do with the leadership, the message. And I like to use Flavor Flav as an example, the cold lamper, you know what I'm saying, for Public Enemy, the joker. You know what I'm saying? Flavor Flav come along, start wearing his hat to the side and wore these big-ass clock. Everybody started turning their hat to the side. You know what I'm saying? He influenced a whole lot of us back in the movie We was teenagers in our early 20s. He came along and sort of revolutionized, like, rap style, the hip-hop culture. He revolutionized. And that's what it is. So we understand that. And it's the same way in trying to understand why the police do what they do. And so we get clear understanding. Now, we say this here. As Stokely Carmichael pointed out in one of his speeches, when he's talking about, like, pressure break the water pipe, and these conditions, they start from the bottom, and they begin to escalate. And the more they escalate, the more pressure builds up. The more you keep banging against those who you deemed beneath you, below you, because you're the proprietor, you the stockholder, you the stakeholder of all the ranch. You control the ranch, and these people just here, they're just citizens on record. But they're not citizens by treatment. However, there's a small minority of them which will be given the break. And that's not to say they ain't going to earn the shit, but we understand we know better. Again, you take 10 people, you put them in a room, they black. About one and a half of them, all right, and I can explain what that half means, but about one and a half of them will be able to live in comfort, live like white people, so to speak. Back in the day, I remember them competing with the Joneses and living like the Joneses, whatever it is. The show used to come on called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous by some Australian British dude, Robin Leach, and he's going inside these exquisite rich people, have through all this shit, and there's a social engineering process right there. I'm saying the type of this thing, go back, what Carter said about independence or financial wealth. Black people, black women particularly, they want to be financially stable too. Meet them a black man where they can be financially stable, and rightfully so, no problem. Because you see a lot of dudes out here ending up with non-black women on their elbow. They have all these millions and millions of dollars. In the meantime, black women, every day, the average black woman who's got a son, living in fear. They're living in a subconscious. She thinks her son is next. And it's almost like a lottery, as cold as they may sound. All right, black women again, come on, y'all. Everybody put y'all names in the bowl. We're going to pull a name, and whoever name we pulling, your son next. And that's this fear that black woman delivered. The conversation with the sister at this meeting, it just so happened to be about the crime, some of the stuff. And there was a sister, she come over, she's trying to inquire, like, who the different brothers was in the room and whatnot. People's political parties, the New Black Panther Party, Black Panther Party alumni who was birthed about. And she had, we're talking about black men, and she got on this conversation about, she said, she has a son. She got two sons. The older son, she believed, he kind of messed up, she thinks she did too much of this. But she kind of used her arm like she was embracing. Like, I said, yeah. I said, I can understand that. I said, it's because you're afraid. She was like, yeah, you're right. Saying your subconscious, you fear what's next. What's coming on. I'm saying, do we have any callers, comrade?
Like power, no, not yet.
Okay, cool, right on. But yeah, all right, so, but anyway, that's what she was talking about, this fear of, the fear of the boogeyman, so to speak. And that fear of the boogeyman is the police. If it not, somebody else who looked just like him. You see what I'm saying? So that right there, the type of psychological trauma that black women go through. You know what I'm saying? You as a black man, you would never know what it's like to lose your son at the hands of the police. You see what I'm saying? And so this is the relationship. So going back to this prosecutor in the article clearly lays out what it's all about. You know what I'm saying? Beyond that, Holland has served as a reserve police officer. I mean, come on, man. Holland has served as a reserve police officer in Bossier City for 20 years and has been criticized for rarely prosecuting police. decided in 2018 against charging two white sheriff's deputies seen on body camera video kicking a black suspect in the face. Now, last show, we was a conversation we was talking about. In the 80s, we said that only if we can catch these motherfuckers on video, if we can just get them on video doing the shit, it's a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk. But obviously, it wasn't a slam dunk. Now, anybody who don't understand, if you want to understand what we mean by the state black murder, how the state police is an extension arm of the state, if you don't understand Rodney King, and go look at that video footage, if it's still out there somewhere, and to come back with a not guilty verdict, that should be a slam dunk right there. Slam dunk, irrefutable evidence that they did it, right? Now, let's remove these pigs out the equation and put some gang members in the equation, all right? And they beating the shit out of Rodney King, okay? They'd use the video, we'll round them up. We use the technology, and we'll round them up. And we're going to prosecute them to what they say, to the fullest extent of the law. So why was it different when it was the police? Why was it different? Because they were the police. And that is the relationship with the state that they have. It's like, it's not no written contract. Nobody didn't sign no papers. It's an unwritten contract that the police has with the state. As simple as that. And so if you take Ronald Green, you take Ronald Green, remove Rodney King out the equation, stick Ronald Green in there, and then take those pigs out, put these five white pigs in there, you got the same shit. So now it's what? Arraignment time and all this other shit, indictment time, you know, the indictment, those kind of stuff. So this weekend coming, and we'll be demonstration. Something like referred to as a march, rally, whatever you want to call it. You know what I'm saying? Farmerville, you know, this weekend Saturday. It's the Saturday coming. And I believe on the 11th, if I'm not mistaken, or the, which is a Monday, is going to be the arraignment of the pigs. Now, they're trying to maneuver to get as minimal charges they can, you know, to take, again, to take, a, they, to take away the attention, the focus, the spotlight from Ronald Green and place it on these officers who were doing their job, so to speak. And so the state has to do its job. You see what I'm saying? Now, with the Rodney King thing again, you know, no conviction. So it was a rebellion. So it was a rebellion that got the state's attention. And a lot of things as a result of the Rodney King rebellion is responsible for the police apparatuses that you see today, for the police technology that you see today, for the escalation of the police that you see today, the militarization of the police that you see today from the ground to the sky as a result of the Rodney King rebellion, right? Hopefully we get a chance to touch on it. But anyway, so they had to go back to the drawing board and strike a deal. And I believe it was two convicted, two not convicted. You see what I'm saying? And so this is the type of stuff you must expect. But at the same time, you know, our faith as a people, as a spiritual people, as a spiritual people, you know, we go through all types of rituals, all types of necessary things that we feel are necessary to get us through in our quest for justice. You know what I'm saying, for the loss of for this brother being taken from our midst, who was murdered, high tech lynching by the police. And that's what we mean by the stay back murder of Ronald Green. And so with this prosecutor, here's his history. Here's his history. You know what I'm saying? And what did they say? Decided in 2018 against charging two white sheriff's deputies, seen on body cam. They were kicking a black suspect in the face. And so we know what we're up against. There's a case
here in the South, where we discovered that the DA and the judge actually was old school buddies. They went to law school together. And so somebody was smart enough to catch on. So they're trying to get the judge to recuse himself or to change a venue that they could not survive in his court with this case that had taken place. And so they're maneuvering behind the scenes. And they will constantly they will have to keep doing it, but keep moving behind the scenes. All right. Now, it says, how can we expect him to fight for us to get justice when he is and loves the police, said Breaker Peters. This is a sister in Shreveport. They have here activists. You go out of these stages, you know, activism and into radicalism and into a militant. But this is what she's saying. How can we expect him to fight for us to get justice when he is and loves the police? It's a no-brainer. You know what I'm saying? Activists who initially thought it was a joke when she heard Highland had been hired in the Green case. He's part of the problem that we have to deal with. And then, of course, you know, the article goes on. But state prosecutors are betting that Highland's long way to conviction can finally bring justice to a high stakes. Listen to this. Because some of us have a problem with embracing the politics. You know, it's political. Our relationship with the state is clearly political. It's been political since day one, correct? Some of us don't even fool with that shit. No politics, no nothing. Matter of fact, we rename the word politics, politrix. Okay, but listen to the shit. But state prosecutors are betting that Holland's long record of convictions can finally bring justice to a high stakes. What do they mean by that? A high stakes, here's the clincher right here, politically fraught case that has simmered for nearly 4 years. Greens May 10, 2019 death on a rural roadside near Monroe was initially blamed by the Louisiana State Police on a car crash at the end of a high-speed chase over a traffic violation. After officials from the governor on down refused for more than 2 years to release the body camera video, the AP obtained and published a footage showing a white trooper converging on Green before he could get out of his car and repeatedly stunning and punching him as he wails, "I'm your brother. I'm scared. I'm scared." A trooper can later be seen dragging the heavyset Green by his ankle shackles, and he is left face down for more than 9 minutes before he eventually goes limp. Okay, it is what it is, you know, and the political ramification will always be there no matter what. But however, we understand, like I said, they try to steer the spotlight away from his murder into something else, to twist it into something, to bend it into something else. You know what I'm saying? Before you know it, the pigs is the victim. Ron Green is the perpetrator. I'm saying this is his story. You can't make this stuff up. You can't make this shit up. You know what I'm saying? Can't make shit up. But what I was saying about Rodney King, or the rebellion, and I've even spoken about the George Floyd thing, but the Rodney King rebellion, as a matter of fact, and we didn't notice at the time that the state actually was caught with its pants down. You know, they project the police as this invincible force that's, you know, whatever, the greatest police force in the world, whatever. But actually, their pants are actually down. We just didn't know it. They had all types of holes in their game. So as a result of that, they began to dump way much more money into what they called civil unrest as a result of the Rodney King thing. As a matter of fact, record money was poured into the police state as a result of the Rodney King rebellion, and that they could never get caught off guard like that again, or they could never get caught in a vulnerable position like that again. And when you look at it, now make this comparison between George Floyd and Rodney King, you see a sort of unconsciousness in the Rodney King thing.
even though there's some consciousness in it, too, because there's certain elements of that rebellion recognize that we need to move this way. And the state understanding, again, they understood, it's clear example. What position did they, you know, get the National Guard, whoever, what did they? They put them in these strategic spots that separated the rich from the poor. Okay, sort of a midway point or in-between point from the property class, white capitalist elites, and the so-called poor community or South Central and whatnot. And they strategically did that. And this is what the Black Panther Party was talking about. This is what Huey P. Newton meant when he talking about the police and Pacific Road is to serve, protect the property class, the property owners, those who own the stakes, the stocks and stuff like that, the ones who wield the money. From the bankers to the businessman to the politician to the judge who they put in place on these different seats and whatnot to protect their interests in terms of voting against something, legislation that protects them. And this is a fact, Jack, straight up. It's a fact. And so that was the difference. Now, with the George Floyd, what did you see? As a result of the experience the first time, it's a whole generation. But somehow, some kind of way, appears to be a consciousness more than it was then. And so this consciousness, what? This consciousness became conscious of itself, which meant that, their anger, boiled over. And what did they do? They were managed to seep out, so to speak, into the more wealthier, portions of the city, where all the money is concentrated. Okay, and that in itself right there struck fear in them. It struck so much fear in them, you had these, the same little 1.5 person talking about in the room, the same ones, that 1.5 person, by the way, that one, and that half a person has 1 foot over here with this group and 1 foot over here with the people, whereas the other one, he's totally aloof from the problems of Black people. He want nothing to do with it. And the thing that forced him is the same thing that forced these white people to respond and react. And next thing you know, you had all these people coming out the woodwork, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Oprah Winfrey, and all these other people, these come out speaking, talking about we. What do we want? Oprah put together this thing. And some of what do we want? What are our demands? So who is the we she talking about here? What they saw was a threat to the system, a threat to the state, which means it's a threat to us. So now, because of the George Floyd phenomenon, that pushed some of these Black people, so-called Black people, out into the open. And so they had to make themselves appear that they was with the people. Because the people have always had enough of it. And as history clearly proves, and history clearly shows that from protest to revolt. If you look at what happened in Iran, you can look around the world, but you can use Iran, what took place in Iran in the late 70s, early 80s, you see the same phenomena that take place. If you look in Algeria, you see the same phenomena. What was the people being treated? The French version or Belgian version, whatever you, the French version, this term called the gender de Marie, something like this, a French word that they use, which is the equivalent of what they call the police. And you talking about the inhumane treatment of a people. The French were violating all these so-called Geneva Accords in Algeria. You know what I'm saying? And nobody was brought before the UN. Nobody was thrown in prison. And we're talking about one of the major contradictions. And it's the same thing here. It's the same type of treatment that the French was meting out to the Algerians. They're meting out the Black people collectively here, and particularly Black men. What is this obsession with Black men? What is this constant thing with Black men, the constant murder of Black men just time and again, and time and again, time and again, time and again, time. What is this here? This is no coincidence. This is a coordinated thing. This is in the subconscious. And, of course, there's numerous factors that could go into it, numerous factors that could go into it. But, we're sitting on the potty case at the precipice now, but, again, this weekend,
You know what I'm saying? The demonstration protest for Ronald Green and the family. They want to we want to heighten the contradiction. We want to first point them out, expose the people to them, and then heighten the contradiction. Because if we heighten the contradiction, it heightens the response of the people. It elevates, the consciousness of the people, and the people transform into a higher self. Okay? Now, some people get a little jittery, some people get a little nervous and whatnot, stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? But it is what it is. So they want to heighten the charges. You see what I'm saying? These lesser charges. Will give these pigs a few years in prison time. You know what I'm saying? In a luxury prison somewhere. You know, and it's a constant, and this is a clear example of what we mean by the state back murder of Ronald Green, and that in their minds, certain people, certain of us in the struggle, let's get something clear. When we talk about civil rights, human rights, black power movement, the black liberation struggle, those things are not necessarily the same thing. Actually, one encapsulates all the others. And this is why people have referred to it as a liberation struggle. Each little skirmish that we do advances us toward the liberation, advances the struggle to liberation. I saw something today, and it hit me like 2 tons of bricks. Matter of fact, 22 tons of bricks. This brother was drawing the same parallel in Southern Africa, this fictitious country that they call South Africa, this fictitious boundary that they set up. And who set it up? The whites did. And they set up this fictitious boundary to carve out a corporation for themselves, an entity, a private entity, where they can rape that part of Africa and live the life of Riley, this comfortability, be economically independent, financially independent, as our call to say. Okay, now, they set this place up to do their thing. And so the same transformation, the little skirmishes, little protests, okay? And let me remind everybody, historically, the Africans have been the one who have been seen as the barbarians, as the savages, as the primitives, as the pagans, as the cannibals. But just so happens, somehow, some kind of way, the whites have been acting all of those things out against the very same people who they accused of being so. And even open fire on the crowd. And so these things eventually would lead to one thing to the next. This is in Southern Africa. You know, that they actually know it as a Zania. Okay, that part of Africa. Now, this brother is drawing the parallel. He's saying, okay, well, he's asking these questions. Liberation and whatnot, he says has been replaced with, liberation and freedom, he says has been replaced with democracy and human rights. And man, I'm talking about like, man, that was heavy. He said, liberation and freedom has been replaced with democracy and human rights. So obviously, liberation and democracy cannot be the same thing. In order to have democracy, you must get liberation. Now, we don't know what these white people talking about, or their eggheads, their brain trust, these people who proselytize, these people who talk shit, these people who spin all these words, and people who define it, whatnot, who's, you know, writing the books and all this kind of shit, and they're reshaping and shaping democracy into their own little private monopoly. And of course, the driving force to convince everybody that it's a democracy is to vote. But is that really true? Can we look at history and see it based on factual, actual reality in real time? Can we take a look at it and see if that is actually what it really is? Because I can go all around the world and point out one democratically elected president after the next around the world who before they were referred to them as a feudalism or autocracy, right?
totalitarianism, authoritarianism, these terms they use, regime. And it's okay. We're going to embrace this democracy that the Americans have so eloquently established, being the brain children of the Greeks, who we're told that this word supposedly derived from. But does history really back them up? The people in Chile, 1973, they're democratically elected president. Again, they was overthrown. Democratically elected president was overthrown by what government? This government, led by who? One Henry Kissinger. On 9/11, that was the first 9/11, when the people in Chile seeing those buildings being whatever, and all this stuff about the Pentagon, all this shit, that day when it was a stark reminder of them on that date what happened to their people by this government, democratically elected president. If you look in Venezuela, Chavez was democratically elected. They attempted to overthrow him. And the people voted for their man. So what's the problem we have in here? If we live in a democracy. If this was a democracy, then why would people who claim, profess to have a democracy would go around the world overthrowing other democracies if this was a democracy? So liberation guarantees all of that. But it won't happen overnight. And so, man, what's he talking about? The reason why I'm saying this is because, again, the things that are taking place in this country will eventually lead to a cataclysm. And because that's recognized and understand by certain elements within society, this is why the private sector, the corporate sector, the Wall Street cartel gang, the people who sell you refrigerators, washing machines, and dryers, are dumping all types of resources into what? Protection. Militarization. All types of technology, such as facial recognition. When they first come up with the facial recognition shit, there's a movie that they introduce us, there's a movie that they had to get us acclimated to. They have to get you acclimated to it first, you know what I'm saying? They have to, you know, put it in a movie to get you to be comfortable with it. So you see it in a movie, you know, you're looking at that shit, you're in awe. You're in awe, you know, you are inspired. You know what I'm saying? In other words, like they say, Obama inspired young black people. They were in awe of his selection to the presidency. And, you know, this again, this is no personal thing. It was what it was. So you're awe inspired, then, you know, you become comfortable with it. You internalize it as all right. Oh, that's cool. So there's the movie that Tom Cruise played in. And that name always seems to escape me for some reason. You know what I'm saying? But the movie he played in was a futuristic movie where they used the technology to prevent crime before it happened. Right? All right, this technology, the facial recognition and whatnot, there's a demonstration that they did. And so, well, we got to test this shit somewhere. They chose South Central. And they showed a what looked like a satellite view or a drone view of these two young brothers. And they'd use a satellite, you know, to, you know, just like in a movie, you know, use technology. And so now you see this whole database. All this shit about metadata and whatnot, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And it appears to be that the model of it was Western Europe, was Britain, was London. You know, the cameras all over the place. And this is what they're doing. You know, they create this to protect their interests, not the people. Because Ronald Reagan would still be alive. He would still be alive. You know what I'm saying? If by their book, he would still be alive. But in their subconscious, it wasn't trying to hit no book. It wasn't trying to go by no book. You know what I'm saying? It's clear as night is someday. I've seen Some of these videos are like the one in Philadelphia years ago where the young brother actually liberated the pig who some people refer to as a stole, you know, the car, you know, or he expropriated the car. And he led him through a chase through the city. And so they finally caught up to him. It was the beginning of the end. They wouldn't try to roll up on him, arrest him by the book. No, they had to get closure from that. They had to get closure from that. You see what I'm saying? So they did their thing. They weren't trying to hear no shit about no arrest him in a proper manner and all this about the good cop and the bad cop and all this kind of shit. Well, shit, if all them motherfuckers weren't good, then how come who was good? They said, hold on, wait, then pull these dudes back off and say, hold on, man, no. You know what I'm saying? And then none of that shit happened, period, at all, none whatsoever. This is why some of us don't even believe they got any good police officers. Unless somebody personal, you know, a cousin or a best friend or a brother-in-law, a frat brother from college or something like that, whatever, somebody you've been knowing since you were 10 or 12, whatever, you know, like that. But, you know, people like asking questions. People want answers. They're asking questions. They want answers to the shit. You know, it is what it is. You know, so we need to put things in perspective so our people can understand. Our people's conscious level has to be raised. It is inevitable. A lot of brothers, we tend to try to tune it out, try to tune these realities out. You know, somebody being entertained by something. You know, try to be as a citizen as we can. You know, hands up, don't shoot. You know, it becomes such a syndrome. You know, this violence has shaped black people, this lopsided one-sided violence has shaped black people so much to the point where we've developed such a syndrome. It's like it's automatic. You know what I'm saying? And this is the last thing. This is the last bash on the whole shit. This is why some people, you know, people who are biblical enthusiasts, you know, people you know, believe in Revelation, and they take in Revelation and they say, this is America right now. This is here. This is where it's at now. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately, there's some in our own camp trying to convince us to still, you know, like, you know, this thing about winning fits. Oh, it's always something that's going to keep coming back around. They've done it numerous times. You know, even Shaquille O'Neal shot a documentary trying to feature the police. And so what did they do? On purpose, strategically. You know, they said, we're going to start the documentary all by showing the police officer walking the little girl to school. You know, I remember that when I was a little child in kindergarten, you know, in class. You know, officer come into class, his uniform is, I mean, I'm talking about perfectly, he ain't got a wrinkle in the shirt, wrinkle in the pants, shoes shiny, bad shiny, everything. And the teacher introduces him as who? They introduces him as high class. You know, everybody say hi to Officer Friendly. And when we got in high school, we saw a difference. So we come up with this rhyme. We say, well, how we say the Officer Friendly was cool when we was in elementary school. But nowadays, Officer Friendly acts a motherfucking fool. Because that was our experience as teenagers. You know? And this is the type of reality that we face every day. And so you condition the children. They call that prior conditioning. So when the child grows up to be a teenager, being a young adult, he becomes what? A respectable young man, a upstanding citizen. It's another term that they would say in the 60s, a respectable Negro. A respectable Negro. Okay? So that's prior conditioning. If you don't work that way, then we'll use force. If necessary, if we have to. This is our reality. This is dismaying to a lot of other people. But there's also a growing segment out there in the streets, you know, that has reached the brink. You know, has reached the brink. But when you take another man's life at the police, then that life is seen as valueless.
And it's like, I've said this before. It's like this, it's like having a surplus value and the commodities become real cheap, you know. In other words, you know, you trying to sell a pair of sneakers for $200 and you ended up with a surplus. And so you had to dump those sneakers. And so it was almost giveaway prices. The sneakers went down $40. So they had to get something from it. They become valueless. And we could never have this conversation without taking a look at that. You know, again, people having trouble trying to understand why this is still happening. You know, people are struggling to try to, you know, like figure this shit out. You know, and those who have been projected as the leaders today, the black intellectuals, you know, and this is no some sleight of hand thing or whatever, stuff like that. But it is what it is, you know. And 9 times out of 10, what history has shown is that it tends to be those who have become, book smarts, you know, those who have become bookworms, you know, those who are willing to, read books. And of course, you know, in the university, you know, to achieve, you know, one's goals and stuff like that. You know, there's this thing where, you know, same birds of same feather flock together. And, you know, somehow, Carter, somehow, in every society, you know, there's always going to be this. We didn't say that it would. As a matter of fact, we can use Africa as a matter of fact. We use Africa, we use India. And I'm not talking about modern Africa, I'm talking about ancient Africa. We use ancient Africa to bring up that point. But there's a stark difference when you peel the layers back. No, there's no perfect country, perfect group, tribe, nation, nowhere on the planet Earth. But however, there are consistent, cohesive, still left around nation, tribes, groups still on this earth. And they just so happen to be in 9 white places. And this is the whole trick. Those same 9 whites had to be seen as primitive, as savages, as pagans, in order to corral them. And then when it was realized that the land that they lived on, the natural resources that was underneath their feet, had become a value in the capitalist system, a dependency. It's a saying that if Africa sunk beneath the ocean tonight, it'd be a chaos in America tomorrow and Europe. The white people wouldn't know what to do. See, so all these things are connected. The same police forces that you see here that brutally murdered Ronald Green on a local level, a state level, countrywide level. It's the same brutal forces that operate internationally. And this is the dilemma now you start talking about Malcolm X is trying to teach us about, internationalizing the struggle. The Black Panther Party caught on to that, to internationalize the struggle. That was just the brilliance on Malcolm's part. And then, you know, people like Fred Hampton, Huey P. Newton, H. Rap Brown, you know, people like Asada Shakur, you know, Sophia Bukhari also. And a lot of times, you know, we be getting the name of some of these sisters, you know what I'm saying, who just important, you know. But this is part of the struggle, internationalizing the struggle. You know, not letting it stay here and keeping the veil off. We want to rip the veil off. And a lot of people actually, you know, starting to see, you know, it's some people been seeing, you know what I'm saying, but due to so-called pressure, economic pressure, State Department pressure, you know, other countries around the world, you know they sort of timid when they come to expressing. But the wheels have come off. In the meantime, they still need to keep law and order. You know, some of these kids, you know, at the end of the month, you know, they got to meet their quarters. You know, they have to make a certain amount of wrestle. They're going to face 3-day suspension. We was told this person in Chicago by one of the Chicago pigs, or shall I say one of the black police officers in Chicago, who had volunteered the information. And so we began to understand more and more and more why the police is doing what they're doing. More and more why police, but historically, you can possibly keep doing the same shit to a people without expecting people to push back at some point. In the meantime, there are those who are trying to put a band-aid on a gaping wound. Like Jesse Jackson said, keep the faith. We must keep the faith. Keep hope alive. You know what I'm saying? The people have been here 500 years. What hope are you talking about? The only hope in their minds is the hope that somebody will drop out of the sky and rescue them and save them. You know? In the meantime, some of us are hoping that the people rise up, that the people are conscious of, become, take them to a higher stage in the struggle, and eventually transform the society from a revolutionary perspective. You know? The system is a system because it's designed to be that way. As a matter of fact, black men are supposed to be getting the type of treatment that they're supposed to be getting treated. You know, it's inherent in the system. There's nobody on this earth that could show us otherwise any other type of rational, reasonable way besides, you know, using things like persuasion and logic, you know, to convince us otherwise. But you go in the neighborhoods and communities, what we refer to as Little Vietnam, and see these realities every day. You know, you go in your city, where you from? You're going to go in the money district, you know, what they call the CBD or the neighborhoods that's right next to it, you know, commercial, semi-commercial areas, you know, these strips, you know, these strips where you know, like they're land grabbing certain cities. Like, I mean, come on, exponentially. There's no Martin Luther King in that shit. There's no equality that we're all together. There wasn't none of that shit. Like on 9/11, everybody, all of a sudden, the niggas is Americans all of a sudden. They got the same enemy we do. Hey, man, we got to cut this racial shit up. We got the same enemy. The terrorists trying to kill us all. It don't matter if you black or white, man. We're Americans. You know what I'm saying? Really, it ain't but really like, what, basically two or three times that black people get treated like Americans. Or they taking off a nigga status and put on American status that's doing war and the Olympics. When all that shit died out, we going right back to our reality that we know. The material condition which leads to these concrete reality. What are they? The concrete reality is that the way things are going and our condition that drive them is that somehow, some kind of way, there's going to be a competition with the people whose job, whose role it is to maintain the shit. They the first line of defense. The police is the first line of defense. And then you get what? The National Guard. And then who comes behind the National Guard? This is his story. It is when the leaders, now, that could be a touchy subject. Those who, you can only, become a leader or recognize as a leader or be declared as a leader. Ain't but a couple of ways, to be honest with you. But 9 times out of 10, historically, it's been the establishment that has had to look. They will always have to look at the portfolio and see what they got. We can take the George Floyd shit. You had the different camps, and I don't really want to use the word faction, but it's like factions. Okay, and they were trying to figure out, okay, well, we got to go with one of these black groups because we have no choice. We got no choice. It'll just be us, and that's it. Now, if we let all of them unify collectively, then we're in trouble. So we got to pick one of these black factions and align ourselves with, where they know they can't do it with the Black Panther formations, the different Black Panther formations that's out. You know we can't do it. That shit's out. It's out. Not even a thought. Okay? And then you got certain groups that may be considered as militant. These are different Black Panther and Black Panther-oriented formations or organizations. They may exemplify as a form of militancy. And there's a stigma that's developing, right? But then you have other organizations, other groups that somehow, in some kind of way, feel the same way that those Black Panther formations feel inside. Subconsciously, internally, psychologically, feel the same freaking way. You see the most militant groups using the word pig, but there's some black people now who's like,
every now and again they slip and let the shit slip out. You know what I'm saying? That let you know right there. A lot of middle class black people, some middle class black people, or whatever you want to call it, well-to-do black people. Ooh, we're gonna look at you. You got some black athletes feeling the same particular type of way. You know, due to what? Due to the material condition, due to the relationship, due to the contradictory relationship between black people and police. It's a fact. But they had to figure out which one of these groups that was best that we had to align ourselves with. And this ain't the first time. They had to do it back in the 20s. They had to do it back in the 40s. They had to do it back in the 60s. And every now and again, it comes around. It starts to reach a boiling point, just like Stokely Carmichael explained. I mean, he hit it right on the head. And this is what's taking place. And so they have to align themselves with one of these black groups and take that black and say, look, these are your leaders right here. These are the ones who are going to exemplify democracy and human rights. Because the two words, they sound rational, you know, right? And yet, every time they hurl the two words at us, or the last time they did it, they did this shit a few years ago, they hurled democracy and human rights towards us. And right when they did it, they murdered fucking Ronald Green. They murdered Ronald Green on film. So these are the contradictions that must be exposed, that must come out. You have to stand out like a sore thumb. The contradiction should be like the elephant in the room. Nobody can see it. Ray Charles can see the shit in his grave. Stevie Wonder is legally blind. He can see it. But there's others of us who don't want to see it. Look, there's two types of people when it comes to knowing something. There are those who don't understand and those who don't want to understand. Because if you don't want to understand, then you can keep trying to legitimize the state. You can keep trying to have faith in a broken system. There's somebody every now and again, one of these white news anchors, CNN, MSNBC, every now and then one of them, or even say it, you know, refer to the system as a broken system. How can we fix this system? Yeah, you can fix the system. You fix the system by revolutionizing the system, by transforming society. You know, even in their own Declaration of Independence. Again, and I'll probably never be, not to be able to say that shit enough. You know, we're going to wear that shit out. Straight up. We're going to wear your ass out. Till you get it, till the people get it. They had the audacity. They had the nerve. They had the gall to tell King George he was a tyrant, and then because they were facing tyranny, and the caller agreed last week. They had the nerve. They had the dog. The bravado to say it, and then act on it, then move on it. It was clear, you know, basically. They've become despots, and the shit's gotten out of hand. And we've given them charge over us. And they've got beside themselves. So we can't live on that shit no more. We got to replace it. We got to demolish it and build a new, you know, one that's more whatever, you know, for the people. But at the same time, they had what? They had slaves. They had slaves. And so they had to keep those slaves in what? In a certain condition, in a certain place, under a certain type of mindset, right? Unless this slave become conscious of himself, then become conscious of his surroundings, then become conscious of why his surroundings are the way that they are, and then it will automatically push him into something else, providing that he can no longer tolerate it anymore, that he's done everything possible in his own mind to deal with it, and he runs out of space. This is a law of nature. In other words, Carter G. Wilson said that you let black men enter a house through the front door, and there's no back door. Right. Shit, he a car went out in his own mind to go out the back because he won't know no better to go out the front door. And if there's none, he'll car one out the back and go out the back. That's how deep it has gotten. But a law of nature eventually takes over. And this is where we at. This is where we at. So the more and more the pigs we at,
in the reactionary way, right? The more and more it drives the people toward despair. In the meantime, like I said, there are those who are trying to save face. There are those who are trying to find another unforeseen option that ain't been tried before. So who did they do? We're going to talk about this next week. So what did they do? It's a perfect time to bring it up. Find another option. Find another escape route, another escape hatch. And so what did they do? They make Donald Trump the scapegoat. They make Donald Trump the scapegoat so they can get the oppressed masses of the people in this country to believe that the system still can work. If we just get rid of this fascist, if we just get rid of this racist, the Mexicans call him, the Latino people call him a racist in a blink of an eye. His racist policy toward the Latino people. In the meantime, he claimed to have done more for black people than any other president in history. So I don't know what black people's problem is with him, if that's supposed to be a fact. Now, some people get a hard on, especially white people, get a hard on this shit. And so, look, so see, he just contradicted himself. He just contradicted himself. He calling Donald Trump a good man. No, don't get it twisted. What we telling you? You know, we make this shit up. But it's a good way to scapegoat all the ills that the state has been met now for 500 years, the black and brown, non-white indigenous people in this country, you know? And to keep things intact, to keep the social order intact by using violence as this common denominator, just like Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman instructs them, that there are men and women of violence and that their violence must be superior to the opposing forces' violence, the so-called criminal. So in the subconscious, according to this so-called stop, it was internalized enough to see Ronald Green as the criminal. And that since they was mobbed up, then they had the advantage. You know? And this is what we mean by politically educating people. And we welcome, like I say, you know, any callers, questions, comments, what have you. We run from nothing here at In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by the Deepest Political Party. We run from nothing. You know what I'm saying? We can even say we're not perfect. You know what I'm saying? By no stretch of the imagination. But we do believe that we're consistent in our message and that we understand and believe that we're also on the right side of history. We believe that we're on the same side of history that the biblical Jesus is on. Because if he was alive today, he'd probably sound something similar or somewhere in the area of what I'm saying. Because he wasn't no friend, no fan of Caesar. Not one time did he tell the people, listen, even though Caesar, you know, has some shortcomings, give him a chance. Keep hope alive. Well, he'd do that shit, he'd do a line in the fucking dirt. He would have been declared a socialist today, according to these terminology, these phrases we use, these expressions and labels, speaking this English shit. You know what I'm saying? And if he would have been speaking Swahili, he would have been saying Uhuru. Straight up. So we're going to stop right here. You know, we thank those who have been listening. Stay tuned for next week's show. You know, we're going to talk about Donald Trump some. We believe that we can see through the veil. So we're going to get into that shit. And sometimes people try to understand, you know, these subjects, these topics, like what they got to do with anything. You know what I'm saying? You know, stick around. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, next week, you know, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, In Defense of the People Radio. And we do mean that. Brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Nat Turner, National Chairman, and our National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland. And our soul technician on 1-2, Sister Amino Shum. And we say, Uhuru, black power, and all power to the people, too. We out of here.
Hey, whoa, it's the vinyl in this jungle, oh, warrior music, oh.
Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me no see them in a my tribulation.
Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them.
I just you and the problem
in this jungle. Every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for truth and life. Jungle,
jungle.
The victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real.
Me get a flat down the road, through me car overload. Me have the spear and my phone battery empty. Maybe through me ear raga raga, me sure never press. People drive past now help me.
And the ones who pretend to care, them just all about the money, yeah. Here comes the cops who want to kid me. Ain't nothing but this, no funny. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for truth and life. Jungle,
jungle.
The victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle,
things are never ever what it seems.
Many true characters concealed. Flattering lips with smiling faces. Pass them all the while in different places. In this jungle, everyone seems to have a need an agenda. Hey, so why you hunting for mine? Now go on like some blind. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for truth and life.
Jungle,
jungle. The victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. Hey. In this jungle, 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 jungle.
Up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me no see them in a my tribulation.
Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them.
I just
you and the problem, the problem.